Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're recording. Rachel is...
And I'm recovering.
In recovery. I obliterated her eardrum.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we had the recording off in between episodes. I've never heard anything so loud come through these headphones.
My mouth was on the microphone like this.
And then she about
screamed. And then I
screamed.
Went...
But like louder.
Loudly.
Louder.
I'm not doing it again.
Please don't.
But I just about killed her, and her goal is to get me back at some point, so...
I'm not going to do it with sound, though. That's, like, the one thing I can't stand is...
I'm terrified.
I have a thing with sounds. So, anyway, it's part two.
It's part two.
It's part two of the Stanford Prison Experiment. Obviously, this would have been a really long episode by itself. So I think we're just going to hop right into it. I mean, normally, like, we're going to skip apologies and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just need to finish and then...
Yeah, because this is a big one.
I have nothing to apologize for because I don't even have all the answers
Well, you
yet.
Do, but you already did apologize for it. Oh, that's a nice face. That's really pretty.
Thanks.
It's really, really nice.
I know. My goat shirt's really nice.
Okay. Anyway. We'll just let
I'm
her
still
do her,
trying to find my radio
thing.
Personality.
So, okay.
Just so
work on
knows.
That. But not right now because
Stanford Prison Experiment.
It's a doozy. It's a big episode. So we're just gonna get right back into it.
Right.
So on Monday, on part one, left off with the rumor of the prison break.
Right.
And that Zimbardo himself admitted that they were so immersed in their experiment that they didn't treat it like experimental psychologists should. They treated it like we have to stop our prisoners from breaking out of our prison.
Right.
So, he's licking my ankle. Hi.
Oh, now he wants to sit with you and be your friend.
Okay, fine.
Oh, hi, sweetheart.
Okay. No.
He's going to try and get on the table.
He's not allowed
we
on the table.
We have to send it. We have to send him back.
What?
We just have to send him back to the ground. He's going to try and get on the table the whole time.
Did you hear that sound that just came out of it?
Oh, I think he's going to throw up. Bo, come here.
He's literally fine now.
Are you okay? You good? Are we good?
All right.
Okay, so...
He just wanted attention. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, so Stanford Prison Experiment, day four.
Yeah, day four. So because they didn't treat this like experimental psychologists, they didn't do what they should have done. They didn't record how the rumor was transmitted and how the rumor was spread and, you know, behavioral reactions, you know, studying it from a scientific perspective. Instead, they had a strategy meeting on how to foil the prisoner's plan.
Huh.
Like with the guards and the superintendent and the warden, who were not actually superintendents and wardens. But yeah, so that's what they did instead.
Weird.
Yeah. Now, they had some pretty brutal plans in place. They even begged the local police for help. They refused. And Zimbardo spent all day sitting alone, waiting for 8612 to return and help the current prisoners.
Did he believe that, or was this them just...
No, he thought it was going to happen. Everyone thought that he was going to come back and, like, help with a prison break. Or at least there would be a prison break if he didn't come back. Here's the thing. Nothing happened. He didn't come back. There was no attempt for a prison break. Nothing happened.
Crazy. Who would have thunk that in a scientific experiment in a controlled environment?
Well, but there are a lot of crazy things that happened. Crazier things have happened.
I guess.
But instead, who came through the door? An old roommate and colleague of Zimbardo, who came to see what he was researching, kind of just familiarize himself with what's going on. And his last name was Gordon. I don't remember his first name. But Gordon simply just asked Zimbardo what the independent variable of his study was. This is how Zimbardo said that he reacted. Quote, "To my surprise, I got really angry at him. Here I had a prison break on my hands. The security of my men and the stability of my prison was at stake. And now I had to deal with this bleeding heart, liberal, academic, effete ding-dong who was concerned about the independent variable. It wasn't until much later that I realized how far into my prison role I was at this point, that I was thinking like a prison superintendent rather than a research psychologist."
I'm going to start calling you a ding-dong from now on, but what the heck?
Just ding-dong, not a bleeding-heart, liberal, academic, effete ding-dong?
Just ding-dong.
Okay.
I don't know what you mean. You don't deserve those adjectives.
Oh, I don't deserve the adjective academic?
Well, okay, maybe that one. Point is, what the heck was that?
I know, right?
It's like he's in the experiment now.
Yep.
He's being controlled by the experiment.
And that's why I wanted to read all of his credentials, because he is such an academic. So then to use the word academic as an insult is so interesting. So that happened.
Okay.
But when nothing happened, right, when there was no prison break, when 8612 did not come back, the researchers and the guards were angry because they had put so much effort into planning for a prison break, but nothing happened. And they didn't even get any data that day because they were all so worried about stopping this from happening. So they were like, they had all this anger and this energy from a rumor. And they were like, well, someone's got to pay for this because this was a big mess. So what did they do? Well, the guards upped their ante. More humiliation, more harassment. They made the prisoners clean the toilets with their bare hands. More forced exercise. They did more counts, like they did them more often and they lasted longer. Literally just anything they could think of to punish
without
them
force.
And assert their dominance. Yeah. Without like literally beating them.
Fair enough.
So then they called in a priest, an actual Catholic priest, not someone like playing a priest, who had worked as a prison chaplain previously.
Okay.
He interviewed all of the prisoners except one. The one refused to talk to him, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
I don't remember if this was day 4 or day 5. I don't even remember if it said, but I would assume it was maybe day 5. No, I don't know.
It's the conspiracy or the...
It's after the
rumor.
The rumor of the prison break.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what matters. But only a few days in, that is what matters for this point, but only a few days in, many introduced themselves by their number instead of their name already. So they had really internalized their roles and were becoming institutionalized, even though they had only been in here for a few days and they knew it was fake.
Wow.
They knew it was a simulation. Now, interestingly, the priest asked them all, I mean, he had some small talk with them, but eventually he asked each of them, "Son, what are you doing to get out of here?" And they were like confused. They hadn't thought about getting out.
Yeah.
So the priest offered to get the prisoner's parents in contact with proper legal aid. And a lot of them did accept. That's not super important to the narrative today. Okay. But they actually did get in contact with legal aid just to kind of play it out as if it were real. But ends up not being super important. But really what is important here is that it's blurring the lines of role play and reality.
Yeah.
Because they're involving their parents. They're involving legal aid. They're having a chaplain come in and say, "What are you doing to get out of here?"
Right.
Kind of implying that you're in here unless you do something about it.
Right. Yeah.
Like prison. Yeah. So let's talk about 819. Prisoner 819 is the one who refused to speak to the chaplain.
Okay.
Or to the priest. He had not been feeling well, and he had asked to speak with a doctor instead. And eventually they convinced him to come out of his cell to talk and figure out what he needed. Because for a while he just like refused to come out of his cell at all. Once they got him out of his cell, he completely broke down, was crying hysterically. I mean, you know how I feel about the word hysterical, but that is what was used to describe him. So Zimbardo took off his chain. He took off his cap. He took him to a room where he could rest, and he said he would get him some food and get him a doctor, which is great.
Yeah.
But one of the guards, while Zimbardo was gone, had lined up the prisoners and forced them to chant, quote, "Prisoner 819 is a bad prisoner. Because of what prisoner 819 did, my cell is a mess, Mr. Correctional Officer," in unison, repeatedly. So then Zimbardo realized that 819 could hear the chanting, and he ran back to 819 and suggested that they leave, because this young man was obviously under a lot of psychological stress, but 819 refused to leave. Weeping, he told Zimbardo that he could not leave. Basically, he wanted to, not only was he entrenched in the experiment, but he wanted to go back and prove that he wasn't a bad prisoner, like the other prisoners thought.
Whoa.
Yeah. Even though he was sick.
Yeah.
And like I said, obviously under mental duress. So then this is how Zimbardo responded. Quote, "Listen, you are not number 819. You are redacted. And my name is Dr. Zimbardo. I am a psychologist. I am not a prison superintendent, and this is not a real prison. This is just an experiment, and those are students, not prisoners, just like you. Let's go." And then he said, he stopped crying suddenly, looked up at me like a small child awakened from a nightmare, and replied, "Okay, let's go."
What?
Yeah. Like
deprogramming. He just woke up from like a hypnotic state.
Basically.
Whoa.
I mean, it's an oversimplification, but yes. Yeah.
Whoa.
So a day later, all prisoners who believed that they had grounds for parole were brought before a parole board, a mock parole board. Mm-hmm. And one question that they were all asked was if they would forfeit their $15 a day in order to be paroled. And a lot of them said yes. And then after this happened, the discussion in front of the parole board went down. They were asked to wait in their prison cells while the board deliberated, and they obeyed. They just all went back to their prison cells.
Fair enough.
However, they could have just quit the experiment, and they would have lost their money.
Yeah.
But the experiment would have been over. And what they were asking for was for the experiment to be over, and they would give up their money. So they could have just said, "I quit, I'm going home." But instead, they asked for those conditions, and they obeyed when they were told to go back to their prison cells.
Instead of just making the conditions happen at that moment.
Instead of just saying, "I quit, I'm going home."
The conditions would have been the same as what
they were asking for. So why obey? I mean, really, because in only a few days, their realities had been entirely reconstructed, and they felt completely powerless. Side note, the ex-con consultant was the head of the parole board and became the most hated authority figure. And after the experiment, he said that he had felt like so sick over what he had become, because he had known what it was like to be on the other side. He had had his parole denied for 16 years while he was in prison. But he became that in the experiment.
Wow. So far, that's one of the craziest things that I'm hearing is how each of the controllers of the experiment equally bought into the experiment.
Kind of. We'll get into that in a bit. Yeah.
You know, like in these moments.
That's actually the next thing I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah. In these moments, both these two figures are kind of adopting their role.
Right.
Rather than remembering it's an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
In these specific instances.
So, yeah. The next thing I was going to talk about are the results. So they are all equally adopting their roles, like you said. The difference is how they are adopting their roles.
Yeah.
So I said earlier that about one third of them showed sadistic tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
So that they found that there were three different types of guards.
Okay.
There were the tough but fair guards, you know, kind of middle of the road.
Yep.
Introducing punishment when needed, but also not crossing the line at least as much. And then there were the like good guys that would kind of reward good behavior and not participate as much in some of the brutal punishments. And the third type were the hostile authoritarians who enjoyed their power and enjoyed humiliating the prisoners. Mm-hmm. Those would be the one third with the sadistic tendencies.
Right.
But interestingly, they said that none of their preliminary tests could predict who would fall into which category. Mm. There weren't any real patterns. The only pattern that they did find actually was for the prisoners.
Yeah.
Prisoners who were more authoritarian could withstand more punishment and humiliation and all that from the guards.
Right.
Okay. You know, as if they're like, "These people are in charge, I obey the people in charge," that kind of thing.
Fair.
Now, with the prisoners, they found that the prisoners coped in different ways.
Okay.
Some of those ways included rebellion, emotional breakdown. Some of them had psychosomatic symptoms. Mm. One prisoner broke out into a rash when his parole was denied.
Wow.
And some of them responded by being good prisoners, trying to be.
Yeah.
But all in all, the guards had completely worn them down, and they had gained pretty much the blind obedience of all of the prisoners. So much so that when a new prisoner was introduced at one point, his number was 416, he was horrified by what he saw, obviously. He was horrified by the way they were being treated, the way he was being treated. But the other prisoners told him not to fight it and just to give up because this was real and he couldn't quit. Instead, 416 went on a hunger strike and was put in solitary confinement.
Wow.
Because he was still not, like...
He didn't buy in.
Programmed into this. Yeah. The other prisoners, when they saw what was happening, though, they saw him as a problem. They saw him as a troublemaker. They were not looking to him as a hero fighting for their rights. They were looking at him as a troublemaker.
Interesting.
So when the others were given the option, like, by the guards to give up their blankets at night in exchange for 416's release from solitary, most of them chose to keep their blankets and let him suffer because they didn't like him. He was a troublemaker. He was a threat to their routine.
To their law and order, essentially.
As the prisoners, yeah.
Wow.
So then Stanford grad student, some places say she had just graduated. Some places say she was still a grad student. So whatever. We're a grad student. Stanford grad student Christina Maslach came in to conduct interviews, kind of help out with the research and also to kind of get some experience. And she was horrified by what she saw.
Yeah.
And she told the researchers that what they were doing was terrible.
Yeah.
More than 50, quote unquote, outsiders had already come in before Christina. None of them said anything about the ethics of the study. She was the first one.
Whoa.
Yeah. So after only 6 days, the experiment was shut down because of what she said.
That was 6 days?
All of that happened in 6 days, and that's not even all of the detail.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. But here's something interesting. Christina Maslach and Philip Zimbardo later married.
Aw, that's kind of sweet.
It is kind of sweet. But I feel like if one of my first experiences with someone was walking in and seeing them allowing, like, basically torture.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear the redemption story.
I wouldn't be inclined to go on a date with that man.
I would agree with that. That has to be one heck of a redemption story. That's all I'm saying.
Well, maybe I'll have to look into that. Look into their love story. Like, this is literally what she's known for. She is known for stopping this experiment. Because who knows what would have happened in the next 8 days if she hadn't.
I kept sitting here waiting for day 14. Like, what am I about to hear?
No. It never happened because it just got too far too quick. And the researchers were so into it that they didn't stop it. They were, like, agreeing with the guards on a lot of things.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So,
all to just prove that prison sucks.
Yeah. Then they got into it themselves.
There is part of me that's just like, did we actually need an experiment to know this? But at the same time, I understand the science behind, like, wanting to understand more in depth of, like, why. What's going on.
What makes people be like that, essentially.
I get that. But at the same time, I'm like, that's such an interesting thing to propose. Like, let's go understand why something bad is so bad by putting people in the badness.
Well, it's not so much about why it's bad, but what causes the bad.
All right.
So that you can prevent that.
So, that's the thing. It's like, in order to figure out what causes the bad, you have to cause the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are just like, sign me up.
Well, I mean college students, dude. $15 a day in the 70s.
That's a lot for a college kid.
Because honestly, I would do it for like 15. If I were still in college, I'd probably do it for $15 a day now.
Absolutely not. No way. I'm not even comfortable to donate my own plasma for $100.
Okay, it's close to $100 a day, though.
No.
If you had signed up for 2 weeks, it's $1,400.
No.
Yes.
To live in prison? No.
I would do it.
Even if I had no idea what was going on, I would literally be like, absolutely not.
If I had no idea what was going on, I would do it for $50 a day. If I knew what was going on, I would probably still do it for maybe not $100, but a couple hundred a day.
Two different kinds of people. Well, okay.
Money was tight in college.
Yeah. So what else do you have for us?
Yeah,
here?
I still got a lot more to go.
Give me the deets.
What's the
sitch?
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, after all of this ended, they did some, like, debriefing interviews 2 months later. So after they had time to kind of get reacquainted to normal life and reflect on their time as prisoners and guards, the prisoners said a lot of things about losing their identities, really becoming their number instead of their name. I actually have an audio from one of the guards. Let me play that for you.
I had really thought that I was incapable of this kind of behavior. I was surprised, even, no, I was dismayed to find out that I could really be a, that I could act in a manner so absolutely unaccustomed to anything I would even really dream of doing. And while I was doing it, I didn't feel any regret. I didn't feel any guilt. It was only afterwards when I began to reflect on what I had done that this behavior began to dawn on me, and I realized that this was a part of me I hadn't really noticed before.
Was this the prisoner or the guard?
No, this was a guard.
Okay, yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. They just, like, totally didn't realize any of it was bad until afterward.
Are there more interviews like this?
I'm sure there are. That was just the one they had on their website. Yeah, I'm sure they're available on YouTube because these are interesting. I'm pretty sure there is, like, an archive of a lot of documents and things from this case.
Wow.
Yeah, so many people believe that this experiment, Zimbardo and his team successfully showed that behavior is influenced by situation. And that regular people can really do terrible things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often used in, you know, understanding like cult-like behavior and groupthink in violent situations, that kind of stuff. And that basically as well, some people also believe that he proved that we are pretty much prisoners of our own mind, as Zimbardo put it in like the title of an article. But recently, I've seen a lot of people talking about debunking this experiment, and I want to address that. So some people think that this experiment is misleading, that what happened was overly dramatized, that the guards didn't do those things on their own. They were encouraged to act brutally, that it wasn't naturally occurring.
Right.
That the research can't be accurate because there could have been some self-selection bias. They were essentially people with sadistic or masochistic tendencies would be more likely to volunteer, or that maybe it happened like this because men are more aggressive. Like, what about women or a group of like mixed gender kind of thing? People are saying that it's not something we should value scientifically at all because it wasn't properly recorded. Like the day that Zimbardo spent just sitting and waiting for the prison break, that it doesn't meet ethical standards, that it hasn't been replicated. And because of all these things, we shouldn't treat it as like the pinnacle of research, and we shouldn't rely on the conclusions drawn from it, and we shouldn't teach it as such. Here's the thing. It is not taught as such. It is not taught as perfect. Every time I've been taught about this in a psychology course, high school, college, whatever, it was used as an example of unethical research. It was not used to be like
a scientific theory or evidence.
Right. I mean, it is kind of scientific evidence, and we'll get into that as I kind of explain why it doesn't need to be debunked. But it's not taught as like this study meets ethical and scientific standards.
Right.
It's taught as it didn't, and that's why it's important to psychology and to behavioral sciences.
Yeah.
So, I mean, first of all, every study has its limitations, especially with things like selection bias.
Absolutely.
This is not something that Zimbardo's not trying to hide anything.
Right.
In my opinion, he's really not. Yes, it wasn't recorded properly. We know that. No one's trying to hide that.
Right.
But that was like him not recording it properly, and the researchers not recording it properly actually became part of the research, became part of the data itself.
Right.
The fact that Zimbardo became a participant in his own study when he meant to be an observer and a researcher, that is vital to the importance of the study.
Right.
It doesn't, you know, negate the importance of the study. It makes it more important. It magnifies it.
Right.
And Zimbardo did give the guards guidelines, but he was open about that. He, you know, clearly laid that out in his explanations of this study, but he didn't give them anything specific, and that's what was important. He was attempting to create a prison simulation.
Right.
And prisons are brutal. So to say that he was like totally misleading in this way is like kind of bizarre to me. Because like, of course he created that. Of course he had to do that. Of course he created that atmosphere.
Right.
Because when you're a prison guard, you're not going into a blank slate. You're going into a place that has this culture.
Right.
So he had to create that culture. Like, he just kind of had to. Like, how else would he be able to perform his experiment?
Right.
And of course, there are confounding variables. There are things that go into it. Like, maybe it was worse with men because there's a lot of research that shows that men are more aggressive than women.
Right.
But he was looking at a male population. He was studying a male population, so you don't apply it to the whole population.
And it was a specific age demographic, too.
You apply it to the population that was studied with a sample of that population. So young, male, middle class, average.
Predominantly white.
Predominantly white. I didn't remember which ones I had said.
Yeah.
You apply it to that population. And also, this was only one study. Like, this is basically a case study.
Right.
So you don't really apply it to the whole whole population until it's replicated. But that doesn't negate the importance of the study at all. It just becomes a case study rather than one that can be applied to everyone.
Right.
Those are some of some things that might be confounding variables. But I saw a study that was meant to point out how many confounding variables there were in Zimbardo's study. But it was so ironic because the study was meant to debunk the Stanford Prison Experiment. But the study that was meant to debunk it had so many confounding variables itself.
Interesting.
Like, they're basically having people predict what would happen. It was like, these people know about it. And they're predicting what happens. But so did the researchers. The researchers were predicting what happened before it ever even happened. And now they're having people predict what's going to happen after it happened. It was like, come on. Like, do you not see the irony here?
Right.
Also, it was the 70s. So, you know, psychological research in the 70s didn't have the same.
Right.
Not guidelines. Standards. Didn't have the same standards. Like, it was, come on. It was the 70s. We were finding our footing.
Yeah.
With psychological studies. But the thing about it being overly dramatized, which it can't, some people do dramatize it, like I did in the beginning for that reason, to kind of tell a story with it.
Yep.
But it also was meant to be dramatic. Like, that was part of it because it was supposed to seem real.
Right.
And that is a dramatic and a traumatic event for a lot of people. But people are saying it wasn't dramatic as they make it sound they're dramatizing the story. But if it weren't so dramatic, and, you know, people were blowing it out of proportion, then why was it stopped for ethical purposes?
Right.
If it wasn't as bad as people say it was, then it wouldn't have needed to be stopped.
Exactly.
So surely it was dramatic and traumatic. So.
But my question is also, even if it wasn't, even if it is dramatic, it still should have been stopped regardless of the extremity of suffering. Right. So,
definitely. But
But maybe if people, it wasn't as dramatic, it would have lasted longer.
Right. And the argument is that they're making it out to seem movie-like, that everyone was suffering and it was just a bunch of college kids. If it was just a bunch of college kids having fun, playing into their roles, they wouldn't have needed to stop it. People wouldn't be having breakdowns.
People wouldn't be getting sick and people
wouldn't be having psychosomatic symptoms.
Yeah.
Where literally your stress manifests as physical symptoms.
Yeah.
That just wouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
So, fair. And of course it hasn't been replicated. Why,
yeah. That's funny to me. I actually laughed when you first said
that. Of course it doesn't meet ethical standards. That's kind of the point. And that's also why it hasn't been replicated. No IRB in the world. Well, no IRB in America where there are IRBs really, but no IRB is going to allow a study like this to happen.
No, absolutely.
So it has become a case study. But there are other studies that are way more scientific or meet those scientific standards better and ethical standards better than the Stanford Prison Experiment that imply a lot of these same findings, like Milgram's shock experiment and Solomon Asch's conformity experiment. I don't know if you're familiar with either of those. Doesn't matter that much, but
point is they suggest similar.
Yeah, in Milgram's experiment, the TLDR is basically there was an authority figure telling people, it's a participant and an authority figure in the same room. The participant was basically given access to a system that would shock someone on the other side of a wall. If they answered a question incorrectly, there wasn't actually anyone over there. People weren't actually getting shocked. But the authority figure would just tell them to keep going, and each incorrect answer, the shock would get more and more powerful to the point of death, and a lot of people shocked to that point just because an authority figure told them to. Conformity experiment, which that's actually something that people say about this experiment too, about Stanford Prison Experiment. They're like, oh, this only has to do with when there's an authority figure, a charismatic leader. Yeah. That's when people conform. Well, yes, but that's not the only time that people conform. Solomon Asch did an experiment where there was a group of participants and all of them were in on it except for one. So they were shown a set of three lines. And first they were given a baseline line. And then they were given three lines to choose from to say which line of these three choices matches this one. And everyone who was in on it would choose one that was obviously incorrect. And people would go with the group rather than the obvious correct answer.
Right.
Like, and that's just two popular experiments, right. Two well-known experiments. There's a lot of experiments on conformity and things like that. But people don't like this experiment because it implies that anyone could do terrible things.
Yeah.
So people want to debunk it.
Sure.
Even though it's, I was going to say science. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
Psychology is a science, and this is science. It was just unethical science.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot easier to say, let's debunk this.
Cause it'll help us sleep better.
But like the point is we know these things and these things are right.
Right.
I'm sorry, not right. These things are taught. Like right. We know these things are taught. This is not a big conspiracy. There's nothing to be debunked. Like this is how it's taught.
Right. Yeah. And it's not like no one's going around saying this is the pinnacle of all psychological study. This is how all cases should be taught. Like,
I mean, it is an important study. It is
right.
Because of what they found, but obviously we're not going to replicate it. And obviously there's a lot of other variables that play into it,
right.
but that is how it's taught. It's not taught as perfect. It's not taught as this is truth and this is the only truth.
Right.
Like there's nothing to be debunked. The only thing to be debunked about it is improper conclusions that are drawn by people
right.
who don't understand the study, but that goes for all studies.
Well, and I think it's interesting because that I think that same principle applies to anything, like even history. Things that happen in history, we don't have to like disregard them or get rid of them or pretend they mm-hmm. didn't happen just because they're distasteful. You know, there's an element of understanding, and to your point, applying it in the correct way. Where in terms of this case, speaking in psychology, it's used as an example of what not to do.
Right.
And also helps with thinking, what is human behavior? What is human right. nature?
I would say that the history analogy applies for the ethics of this, for sure.
Right.
Like the validity of the experiment is a little bit apples and oranges with history,
agreed.
But you're right.
In terms of the ethic part, I think regardless, ethically speaking, no matter what time period we're in, no matter what field you're in, there will be moments in the history of that subject or that
right,
science
right.
that are unethical.
Yeah, especially in psychology because it's much more recent. It's much more new.
And it's human beings. Like mm-hmm. at some point, I mean, I guess everything kind of relates to human beings, but studying a human being, there's no way to like do a pre-test on an animal. I mean, I guess people will do that. But
a lot of psychological experiments are done on animals.
But I guess my point is, at some point, in order to get conclusive data on a human being in psychology,
you
have to experiment on human beings. Right. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not excusing behavior, to your point. We don't just say like, oh, yeah, it's fine. Like mm-hmm. you were just trying to do science. It's
right.
Like, no, that wasn't okay.
And he fully admits that what he did was wrong.
Right.
Like that he reacted incorrectly, that he was blind
right.
to what was going on. Which just, I think, makes the mm-hmm. data all the more compelling.
Right.
So much more compelling.
That even the
so quickly.
World-renowned psychologist
so quickly.
Found himself caught up.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is super interesting. And to your point, I think it's important to recognize it, especially in fields of psychology where it's like, we don't have to just get rid of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It happened. And it's awful.
I got so fired up when I started like finding all of the mm-hmm. things about like debunking it. I was like, guys, like...
It's ironic
because
there's nothing to debunk. There are no conclusive results. The experiment was canceled. Like,
6 days in.
There's nothing to debunk. No one claimed it had any like concrete conclusive evidence.
Yeah. And it's like the researchers themselves admit like this isn't the full data and we didn't react correctly.
Crazy.
Yeah. So there's no big conspiracy. So yes, it is flawed, obviously.
Right.
But everyone knows and admits that.
Even
Zimbardo.
Even the researchers and participants.
But like I said, that's what makes this experiment important in the field. So the fact of the matter is that, unfortunately, a lot of these tactics are used in prisons every day.
Mm, yeah.
And when you're immersed in that culture, you often become a product of the culture, whether it be as a dehumanized victim or as a controlling guard.
Yeah.
Of course, people do like to make this study like, oh, it's all nurture and it's not nature. It's like, well, okay, not really. We're all kind of both. But you mm-hmm. become mm-hmm. a part of the culture that you are entrenched in, whether that's good or bad. I know I've mentioned before that I took forensic psychology course in college. And we studied prison and police culture. in that undergrad class. Mm-hmm. And these things happen. Like, they really do.
Right.
And we've been hearing a lot about it recently with, like, police culture.
Mm-hmm.
How a lot of people go in with truly noble intentions.
Right.
But if you go in, like, truly noble intentions of protecting and serving, as, you know, the name implies. But if they're working in, you
right.
know, a precinct, a county, whatever, with a bad culture, they become indoctrinated themselves so quickly and become the opposite of what they wanted to be.
Yeah.
So it's like, it happens all the time. Mm. And this was just kind of doing that in a controlled environment to understand from a first person perspective,
mm-hmm.
at least for the researchers and the participants, of how and why this happens and just how quickly it happens. And I think that is really one of the big things to take away from this mm-hmm. experiment, is that it's just, no one's immune to it.
Yep.
Obviously, there are people who are the good guy guards and things like that. But how quickly those dehumanization tactics just break people down, and how people, like the audio that I played, who would never even dream of doing horrific things like that, can do those things in that environment.
Yeah. It's, and I as a history geek and political geek and all stuff, I really enjoy this conversation too, just considering how we even study history and consider the bad things that happen in the mm-hmm. world. Like, understanding there is a psychological component here. It doesn't excuse behavior, but it's mm-hmm. worth considering when we really are trying to break down what is going on, when we're trying to understand the world and events and relationships mm-hmm. and social justice issues and politics and all these things. And we always get that question of, why is this person so wicked? Like,
mm-hmm.
I think even politicians, where we're all like, why are politicians so corrupt? But, you know, generally speaking.
Don't get me started on St. Augustine's libido dominandi. Yep.
I won't do it yet.
And the lust for power.
But that's the exact kind of concept here that's even shown in this case study.
Power is dangerous.
You get in a certain culture and it shapes you, and you're not mm-hmm. as immune as you might think.
Yep, exactly.
You know, and so I think this mm-hmm. is so fascinating. I'm really glad that you dove into it, because, you know, I've knew the surface. So I think this is a great, even just life lesson, a little applicable, like, take it with you.
I'm so fascinated by this, by this study. So watch I think it's on Netflix, Stanford Prison Experiment, if you're interested.
That's what I'm watching tonight. I can't wait.
It doesn't seem like your kind of movie.
I love those. I mean, Silence of the Lambs, like any of those kinds of like psychological thriller type movies.
I know. And you've like expressed that to me before, that you like those movies. And I don't know why. It just seems like you wouldn't like those.
I know.
I don't know. But I'm glad you do. Because I do too.
I do. It's a great time. Is that all you have for us today, Rach? On our part two?
Is that all? That was so much.
Well, I meant it more like, I sarcastically of like, is that all? Like,
I know.
This is a lot to digest.
I know you meant it sarcastically. I just pushed back because that's what
You played into the circumstances.
Because I'm an ENTP and I debate everything.
I don't know what that means.
Well, that's your fault.
So.
Spoken like a true ENTP.
I guess so. So I guess now's the time where we wrap this up.
Yeah.
We'll let you know where you can find us for more.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys are going to want to see the photos from this. There are photos from it. Maybe I'll try to find some videos, see if I can include some of those.
Yeah. So definitely, if you didn't catch part one and you're listening and thinking, what the heck is going on, go back.
Well, I think people would figure it out before they got to the end of part two.
You never know.
Okay.
People can go in and out. It's a longer episode, so they might be zoning in and out.
Okay.
Maybe they missed the first part. Who knows? Or if you're forgetting stuff that happened in part one, go back and rewatch it.
That's more likely.
Whatever, or if you remember it all, congratulations, you listened to two parts in 1 week, and we are very proud of you.
I really like the idea of people memorizing everything I say.
You should. You should be.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
So where you can find us and where you can see some of these pictures that Rachel will be providing is on our Instagram.
Hyperfocus Pod.
Twitter.
Hyperfocus _pod.
TikTok.
Hyperfocus Pod.
YouTube.
YouTube and Facebook are both Hyperfocus : A Podcast for Chaotic Minds.
And then email.
HyperfocusCast@gmail.com. Fan mail, love letters, topic ideas. I don't know, anything.
Favorite color.
Say
I'm
hi.
Still looking for that. Or just, I just want to know people's favorite color. It says a lot about a person.
What's your favorite color?
Cinderella blue. The color of my goat shirt.
That makes a lot of sense. I don't know why.
And blonde?
No, that's not why. I mean, it doesn't hurt, but that's not why.
Or if you have answers to Rachel's questions.
What are Rachel's questions?
Why my favorite color might be blue.
Oh.
All that to say, email us. We'd love to hear from you.
We're going to get weird theories about why your favorite color is light blue. Sorry, Cinderella blue.
Thank you for clarifying that. It's the color of my laptop case, too.
There's no case on your laptop.
The laptop cover sleeve protector. So we'll see you on the next episode.
For anyone who's not watching on YouTube, I was just being stupid. Stay chaotic, babes. Oh, that was a long one.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.